You're listening to a Share Radio podcast.
Time now for our regular weekly catch-up with Money Week magazine, and I'm joined on the line now by the editor-in-chief, Merin Somerset-Webb. Good afternoon, Merin.
Afternoon, Ed.
So what's on your cover this week, Merin?
Well, the cover is actually India, but before we get to that, I just want to tell you about one other story that's in the magazine that kind of kicks everything off.
Okay.
It's about the welcome return of investment clubs, it's called. And back when I started my career, probably you as well, there were investment clubs all over the place, you know, groups of people and communities getting together to run their money together. And it was very valuable because it brought lots of, you know, different opinions together. There was no way to have groupthink if you were investing, you know, in a group of people coming from different areas, different careers. Everyone could use their own personal experience.
I was a member of one.
And then, were you? Well,
yeah,
there you go.
It's great fun.
And, you know, it is great fun. And, you know, we used to get communications from investment clubs all the time. And then it sort of, you know, as the financial crisis went on, it kind of trailed off. You know, we stopped hearing from them. People stopped telling me about their investment clubs. Anyway, the good news is that now they're kind of back. You know, there were 10,000 or so in 2001, and then it went down to sort of almost nothing a couple of years later. But now, last year, twice as many opened as the year before, so it's beginning to come back. And I really can't recommend it more highly for people who want to get into investing, who want to do this in a sort of non-addictive but interested way. You know, there's a bit of admin around it. You have to notify HMRC. You have to make sure that you do your accounts properly, that you notify everybody at the end of every year what dividend payments have been, what capital gains there have been, etc. But if you can manage that, you know, get a chairman and a treasurer and a secretary, you then have a great environment in which to discuss investment and to, I think, a better chance of getting it right than if you're sitting by yourself or at a computer late at night after work doing it by yourself. So I really, you know, strongly recommend that people who are interested in investing and who are maybe doing a bit too much by themselves and getting caught up in momentum views, get together with a group of people and do it properly. It's very social as well. You know, we're all looking for hobbies, right? Great way to make investing into a proper hobby.
Absolutely. Interesting, you said, Merin, that it sort of fell away in the financial crisis. Is that just yet further evidence that too often private investors buy shares when they're expensive and sell out when they're cheap?
Well, I think that's a pretty unkind characterization of a private investor, actually. Their long-term record is not so bad. But it's certainly true that, you know, when there's a lot of information around and things are very exciting, everyone wants to be involved. And, you know, the period after the financial crisis was not an exciting time for investment markets. It was a depressing time for investment markets. So, you know, obviously people go away and try and get interested in something else. But now they're back and, you know, long may it last. Long may it last.
Okay, so what else have you got this week, Merin?
Well, the cover story itself is India. Is it the world's hottest emerging markets? And what we've done this week is we've got a brilliant debate going between two of our regular writers, Jonathan Compton, who's pretty down on India, and Rupert Foster, who regular readers will know as a perennial optimist, and he's very, very keen on India. So Jonathan, who's he's actually spent a lot of time in India over the years. In fact, he managed a broking operation in Mumbai back at the beginning of his career in the 90s. He says, you know, we constantly hope, but in the end, India is so held back by its structural problems, by its caste system, by its lack of infrastructure, by its corruption, that it just can't happen. You get these little spurts, but in the end, politics overcomes everything. And he says it's basically the saddest of all the emerging markets tales that he sees. Enormous potential, but until we actually see major structural and major social reform, it isn't going to happen. And until you see that, you should stay well clear of the Indian market. I mean, he does help us out by recommending a couple of stocks that have an interest in wider emerging markets growth. But in general, he's very sure that the Indian market itself is going to disappoint again.
So now, what's behind Rupert's optimism then? Yeah.
Well, Rupert sees this structural reform out there. He tells the story that, you know, I suspect we've all heard before, the last great opportunity in emerging markets, a huge middle class, digitalization, the financialization of the economy, which we saw in the abolition of smaller banknotes a little while ago. All these things that Jonathan sees as not happening, Rupert says, will happen. They're racing to adopt the digital economy. We've seen electricity going out across to pretty much every village in the country. We've seen new companies rising that give good data allowances to all customers, price wars in the mobile sector, etc. And as a result, a huge explosion in the internet industry, particularly the things that we don't necessarily approve of, casual gaming and that kind of thing, but streaming TV, social media. And he says, you know, this is the last country that can really, really move the growth dial for the consumer companies around the world. And he sees it happening. So, you know, he's put in a couple of stocks that he thinks are the best places to go. And, of course, we always recommend a fund, and if you are going to go for Rupert's side, and the truth is that, you know, this is one of the rare things that I'm slightly undecided on. I read Jonathan's view on it, and I'm 100% convinced.
Right.
And then I read Rupert's view on it, I'm again 100% convinced.
Right.
But the trust that we suggest for this is Aberdeen New India Investment Trust, which is on a discount of about 11% at the moment, so worth looking at.
Even if Rupert is right about India, though, isn't a lot of that good news, Rupert's good news, already in the India share price, if you like, already?
Yes, I think that's fair. You know, the market there has done pretty well recently because everyone is going with Rupert's view. However, if he is actually right, the market will go a lot further over the next decade. You know, if this reform really is coming through, if you really do see a fall-off in corruption, a growth in infrastructure, the full adoption of a digital economy, India being able to skip a few phases, obviously, of the development process, if he's right, then the valuation of the market is perfectly fine.
What else have you got this week, Merin?
Well, on the subject of overvaluation, on the markets page, we've looked at the NASDAQ, you know, reaching 6,000. And every time you get to a round number in any market, everyone gets slightly overexcited. But of course, if you look at NASDAQ, it hasn't really gone far. It hit 5,000 in early 2000 and then fell by 80%. We're now about at 6,000. You've got an annualized return there of only just above 1%. So while there's been a huge amount of money to be made by stock pickers in the market over this time frame, the market itself has been pretty lousy. As you want, interesting aside on this, while since 2000, over 300 stocks have lost 90% or more of their value, 125 have gone up by over 1,000%. And the biggest winners aren't tech firms.
Oh.
One is an oven manufacturer, one is a soft drink maker. So while we always think of the success of NASDAQ being about tech, it's not necessarily so. Anyway, so we look at this and say, well, is it incredibly expensive now? Well, you know, it's not cheap. But it's a lot more stable than it was. It's a lot more diversified. Technology stocks only make up 40% of the index as a whole. Valuations are completely different. Forward PE hit, 70 or something like that back in 2000. Now it's more like 23 times. And the S&P 500, as you know, is on a forward PE of about 18. So the valuation difference there is nothing like what it was. So while you've still got these high-flying, overpriced tech stocks in there, Amazon being the classic on 130 times earnings, as a whole, the NASDAQ is a very different business to the market it was back in 2000. So it's less hard to sort of chuck the label bubble at it in the way you could then.
Merin, we ran out of time, I'm afraid, but thanks very much for speaking to us again today. If anyone wants to see this week's edition of Money Week magazine, you can buy it in WH Smith or subscribe on the Money Week website. And Merin, also thank you so much for all your contributions to Share Radio over the last 2.5 years. We've been very grateful for all your words of wisdom.
Thank you, Ed. It's been very nice being on.